Simple things, some of them well known, some of them not, and maybe incorrect, but I hope correct. So the content of the talk is calculations of a very well known quantity, phi squared, in the de Sitter spacetime, and by two different methods. One is very well known. It was done, I think, at the end of 70s and beginning of 80s when inflation scenario appeared. And since I never understood how the calculations in the limit of zero mass have been done, we tried to do that in a different way and obtained deriving equation of motion for evolution of this quantity phi squared. And we found the same result as the classical one for massive case and almost the same result for massless case. Amplitude was, magnitude was the same, but sign was different. But it's, and what does it mean? I would like to discuss at the end of the talk. I think algebra was correct, and maybe it may indicate to breaking of de Sitter invariance, or as I understood, not really understood, but at least I was informed by Richard Woodard that maybe there are some problems with ultraviolet renormalization, but we'll see at least what how it all goes. The action is trivial, very well known. It is kinetic term, massive term, and maybe non-minimal coupling to gravity. In fact, the last term is not very essential, but we took it just for, you know, for completeness. Equations of motion are also well known. In Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric is just like that. There is derivative part, Hubble friction, and then potential thing. And all what will be done, of course, not in the arbitrary FRW metric, but in the simple de Sitter one. And the important quantity which will be heavily used in what follows is energy momentum tensor. And this is its expression. Maybe sometimes the part which is proportional to psi is put into equation of motion, and the second term is simply renormalization or change of Planck mass term, and the other is second derivative. I don't know where to put, but we just put everything into energy momentum tensor, and so it is conserved quantity, which should be, as was mentioned on the previous talk, energy maybe not conserved, but energy momentum tensor is always covariantly conserved. Otherwise, it would be a real disaster. Infrared disaster, which is incomparable to what to infrared problems, which we are all talking about. It would be a kind of explosion if Tmu is not conserved for massless particles. And of course, that I want to say, that there are no quantum anomalies in this equation. Okay, so vacuum expectation values of the energy momentum tensor in de Sitter spacetime was calculated in 76 and also in 78 by Dauker and Critchley and by Bunch and Davis. And what is essential for what I'm going to say, that it is vacuum expectation value in de Sitter spacetime. The only essential tensor is metric tensor. So the result of for energy momentum tensor is proportional to the metric tensor by some reason which I forgot why. We used Latin indices instead of Greek one, AB, which runs from 1 to 4 or from 0 to 3, so there are normal four-dimensional metric. And there are a few terms which all dependence on xi disappears if xi is equal to 1 over 6. It's normal conformal limit, and so this standard expression. And nu squared, where psi function is logarithmic derivative of gamma function, is related to mass and psi also in a very well-known way. This is...
You have the absolute value of R. Why should it be absolute?
Here, I think it should be absolute value. Well, it depends upon definition of R. Sometimes it is positive, sometimes it is negative, depending whether it is you use metric or some connection, some convention. So either R is proportional to trace of energy momentum tensor or to minus that. So it is. Yes, yes, yeah. It is. So I don't remember which convention we use, because I'm always confused there. So each time I do a calculation, I started from them from very beginning. I find my old notes, which sometimes are wrong. Okay, so what is essential to the part of the talk is the limit of this energy momentum tensor. It is just loops of scalar field in external curved space-time, which is proportional to Hubble parameter 2 power 4, G mu, or AB, whatever you want. And there are three terms. One is the usual, I would say, classical part, which appears, well, I want to note that we are, at the moment, this expression is for psi equals 0, and it is well known that even if mass vanishes, theory is not conformally invariant, and as I used to say to students, maybe incorrectly, that we are very lucky that scalar field is not conformally invariant, otherwise life would not be possible because density perturbations may be not generated, but okay, that's a separate problem just because I have too much time. I'm speaking about something not closely related to my talk. So the first part is just a standard contribution to the to energy momentum tensor, which has non-zero trace. Second and third part, in a sense, are anomalies. And essential thing, well, I don't know what the essential thing about them. There are two contributions, and this one vanishes, is proportional to psi minus 1 over 6. So there are some quantum corrections, and it creates some problem, solution of which I don't know. Maybe it's a problem related to our derivation of phi squared. So quantum average of phi squared in this iter space-time was calculated by Bunch and Davis in 78, and the essential thing, it is the limit of this simple expression, is very well known, and it is obtained in the limit of very small mass. Mass is smaller than any other essential parameter in the model. In this case, it is Hubble parameter, so mass is much smaller than Hubble squared, and we have this expression. So it was also a little later when inflationary model, inflationary scenario were worked out. Then it was, if one assumes from the very beginning that m is equal to 0, then the result was phi squared behaved like h cubed t, and it was interpreted like by Starobinsky, I think mostly, that it was like Brownian motion of chaotic quantum fluctuations and with the total length, which is proportional to square root of time. So it is like, you know, drunk sailor problem. And it was all done in 82. It was mostly by Vilenkin and Ford and Starobinsky, who agrees with everything. And as I mentioned, that our result is the same exactly, but with big minus sign here. And of course, the first, my feeling was that if, when we found this result, was that it is some garbage, completely wrong, because we have positive definite operator. But it is not so, because phi squared should be ultraviolet, renormalized. And because of that, this quantity phi squared is not necessarily positive. We know very rather famous example of vacuum expectation value of gluon field over vacuum, which is negative in QCD after ultraviolet renormalization. So the usual all result is derived, I don't like, just by brute force. We have scalar field, which is quantized in the standard way, and this mode function Fp, some equation of motion for the mode function can be solved, and there are two Hankel functions with the index 3 over 2, which is something like sine or cosine or exponent, so they're expressed as well known through elementary functions. And usually, one assumed that C1 is 0 and C2 is something normal, usual normalization of quantum theory in flat space time. So the idea is that we need to recover the flat space limit for large p when curvature of space is not essential, wavelength is very short, and in this case, of course, curvature is not important. In this case, node function has this beautiful form, and if we calculate phi squared, then there would be term which is proportional to h squared divided by k squared, again, very well-known result, And the first term is quadratically divergent. It's also well known. It is very well known quadratic infinity, but it is not related to curvature, so we simply subtract it out. As somebody mentioned, that infinity is equal to zero, so we do this trick, as everybody. As for the rest, there is quite funny expression. We have to integrate logarithmically divergent integral and make cutoff both in infrared and ultraviolet of order of Hubble parameter and some wavelengths which are inside horizon or whatever. So the result was obtained like that, and the, it sits essentially of small momentum. And my first guess, I didn't check it, was maybe C1 coefficient, which was supposed to be zero. Maybe an essential range of momentum is not zero, because the vanishing of C1 is only true asymptotically for large momentum, and maybe there are some corrections to C2. But so we wanted to make alternative derivation of this result together with my student Diego Pelliccio in 2005. And so the idea was to derive an equation for phi squared, which is also, if correct, is trivial. So we have to differentiate twice phi squared operator. We have phi and square of, so four-dimensional square operator acting on phi, and then there is cross term. And so after all, we come to the equation, which is almost closed. We have differential operators and some potential term acting of phi squared. F is average value of, where is it? Ah, it's up here. Average value of phi over vacuum. And so there are some term which is cross term, nabla phi by nabla phi, and this is unknown function, but it can be found from the expression for energy momentum tensor. And because, well, we have expression for that, and we can substitute this, express this quantity, express this quantity through the trace of energy momentum tensor. And since we assume De Sitter form, so it will, would be just energy density up to some coefficient. After a while, we can obtain essentially this equation, which contains 1 minus 6 xi, and then we have mass squared, and then we have rho right here. So we considered if xi is equal to 1 over 6, you can see that phi is a constant. That's the only possibility, which is average value of rho divided by m squared. And also, exactly the same result asymptotically for large t would be obtained for xi equals 0. And this classical result of Bunch and Davis, which follows from the following thing, that this is general solution of this equation with constant rho and C1 and C2 some unknown coefficients. And there is exponentially decreasing term and slowly exponentially rising term. And here is always some ambiguity related to the fact that they don't know what is the beginning of time in De Sitter space. So if it is eternal De Sitter, I don't know how to treat this thing, and we'll return to this later. So then after that, there is a simple algebra to do all these calculations. For small mass, this term is exponentially decreasing, and we have something like that. And if we consider the limit, mathematical limit of mass going to zero, which is much smaller than Hubble parameter, and time is not very big, where is time? Here. And then we come to the standard result found by Bunch and Davis. And it looks formally the same as the result for xi equal to 1 over 6 here. But it's not exactly so, because trace of energy momentum tensor, which is rho, written as rho, is a function of xi and mass. So this expression for phi squared depends upon xi, well, depending upon what is the result for the trace of energy momentum squared. And the next thing, if we take into account only non-anomalous terms, which I presented in the limit of zero mass on one of the previous slides, then we obtain the standard result we obtained by Bunch and Davis, which is phi squared is Hubble to the 4 divided by m squared with the correct coefficient. If include trace anomaly, in the, I think it is incorrect, but if you do the same thing, and I will try to explain a little later, include trace anomaly into energy momentum tensor, the coefficient would be somewhat different, 61 over 240, very nasty looking numerical coefficient, and probably it is wrong. And why, I will try to argue later, but it would be mostly hand-waving, but not much arguments. So another thing, if we assume that mass is equal, not we take the limit, sometimes there is, one should be careful taking the limit of mass going to zero or starting with mass equals zero at the very beginning. But here there is no discontinuity, but one should be rather careful. So if we take mass equal to zero, psi equals zero, from the very beginning we obtain the solution, which would be, after all, the same as found by Ford and Wilemkin, and also by Storobinsky, which is just h cubed t divided by 4 pi squared. And it is quite a surprising result. I had some discussions with Storobinsky, who tried to find that there is algebraic mistake. After all, he agreed that there is no algebraic mistake, maybe some deeper misunderstanding. So at the moment, I don't know what is here. So sign is opposite, and I talked to Richard, and he said that he knows maybe explanation of this phenomena because how it is related to ultraviolet renormalization. We can do the same thing if we take start with general solution with arbitrary coefficients C1 and C2, and if you want to make situation consistent with the case of the limit of mass equal to zero, we have to assume that one of the coefficients is singular at mass equals zero, and then there will be some cancellation, and we come to the same result by the choice of this coefficient C2 being inversely proportional to mass squared. Well, we previously assumed that it was not so the case. Anyhow, so. And now I return to the problem of anomaly. If we start with this equation, which was a few slides before, you can see that if we take conformal case, namely psi equal to 1 over 6 and mass equal to 0, what happens in this case? In this case, left-hand side of the equation would be 0 and right-hand side of the equation would survive because of anomaly. So it's surely inconsistent thing. And maybe it explains why we obtain the result which is inconsistent with the classical one. And my feeling is that we have to take into account anomalous contribution on the left-hand side of this equation. And I did not do that because I only recently returned to this problem. In fact, I prepared my talk being here. And what I have in mind is analogy with the Maxwell equations in de Sitter spacetime with anomalous contribution. And there appeared in the left-hand side of the equation term coming from anomaly, and it describes, for example, photon production in de Sitter spacetime because of breaking of conformal anomaly. Normally, conformally invariant particles are not produced in Friedman-Robertson-Walker spacetime, but anomaly could help and could produce photons. In fact, the equation, strictly speaking, is not local, but for essential part, especially perturbatively in fine structure constant, non-local terms are not so essential, at least in the limit which we are interested in, so it's not so bad. Okay, so one, for scalar part, and this is not done, for scalar field, we have to do probably the same thing to calculate Green functions, which inverse of that would be equation of motion, operator acting on that, and there would be some infrared problems, which are discussed here, or were previously very actively discussed. And so I don't know whether it will help or not, but I don't see any other explanation of that. And of course, as we know, Green functions are not, do not behave very nicely, so there may be some problems. So I finished even faster than I expected. So it's almost conclusion. There are alternative calculations of phi squared, which is free from infrared problems because energy momentum tensor behaves well in infrared limit, gives the same result for non-zero mass as the standard one. And that makes us happy. Forget about anomalies in this case. The same calculations for mass zero differ by sign. And what I can say, it reminded me Italian joke, since I have time. You know, Italian mostly speak not only by their mouths, but also by their hands. It helped me enormously when I just arrived to Italy and asked my way and understood direction without much. And there is Italian joke. Someone is some stranger going along the street and ask, please tell me where is the railway station. And this guy was carrying Italian two huge watermelons. He said, please take my watermelons. So he took his The stranger took his watermelons and Tali said, I don't know. So this is exactly my gesture. I don't know. I have to put this down here. So I don't know the answer. And there are, could be possible explanation. First, modification of mode functions at low momentum. It probably solvable. It may be solvable problem, but I don't know how to solve it. Normally, we assume that everything is normalized to flat space-time and proceed in this way. Maybe there is ultraviolet renormalization, which was discussed by Nick Tsamis and Richard Wooder. Then I thought for a while that it may be related to ambiguity in the choice of vacuum. There could be different vacuum states, and we discussed it in our paper with Pelliccio, but we didn't come to any conclusion. My first choice was breaking of de Sitter's symmetry due to some kind of spontaneous breaking due to infrared effects. But I was not able to proceed more than just saying these words. And maybe it's possible, maybe this is really difficult. Another possibility is finite, to take into account some possibility that a finite duration of de Sitter stage. We tried ages ago, not in connection with this problem, though I found this effect more or less at that time, but in different relation to different problems, together with Einhorn and Zakharov. But we tried to have some model with, which was initially more or less flat and then turned to de Sitter, but the model gives some prescription for infrared problems, infrared it could regularize infrared situation, but the model by itself is not really healthy. So maybe there is nothing of the above. I think I stop here.
Like a comment and a question. So first the comment is, thanks for mentioning Nick and me. We actually confirmed that you did the calculation right, or if you did it wrong, we did exactly the same calculation after you did it, a long time after you did it, and we got exactly the same minus sign. Okay. I think the answer to it is that when four people, Ford and Lincoln, Starobinsky and Linde got that result, that famous result that the coincidence limit of a scalar propagator grows like log A. They didn't renormalize it. They were talking about the unregulated scalar, or the fully regulated but unrenormalized, because what would that mean, renormalize a propagator, scalar propagator. And that in particular isn't what you would get if you renormalized the stress energy tensor. So see, you and we too, we followed, we did exactly the same thing the first time through and got exactly the same minus sign. You did a different thing than just looking at the VEV of that operator. Mm-hmm. You subtracted a counter term when you renormalized the stress tensor. Mm-hmm. And that's an okay thing to do, but that's not what they reported. They reported a completely different thing.
Yeah, I see.
And further, then you can ask, okay, well, to the extent that it means anything, this logarithm, you know, when it appears in diagrams, the result really is ultraviolet divergence plus this log A term. You know, we can't have ultraviolet divergence, so how does the ultraviolet divergence get absorbed? And the answer is it gets absorbed by renormalizations, but not of the free scalar stress tensor. You can sort of see that, right? The free scalar stress tensor has no special status in the interacting theory, like, say, lambda phi to the 4 theory, for which the square of that propagator would appear, it gets renormalized by other things, in that case by a conformal counterterm and a cosmological counterterm. So it gets renormalized in a completely different way, so we have the best of both possible worlds. You're right, those four guys are right, and the logarithms are right.
It reminded me of another joke, but maybe other questions.
And I had a question, a real question, too, and that is, I'm really interested in your 1981 question, because I have a Swiss student who was doing a calculation.
Which one?
In your 1981 QED calculation that you mentioned, I was trying. I knew you had done that. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to find that old paper, and I couldn't find it. So thanks very much for telling me about it.
Surprisingly, I found a PDF file of this paper in my computer here.
Very good.
Okay. It is
interesting. I think now that I know what date to look. So you have such a long, distinguished
Stop it. I can tell that's a joke in this. Okay, anyway. Thank you. I can give you this. Not only the reference.
I just want to ask you, I can't tell signs straight off, but did you find screening or anti-screening of the charge from the
I need to check. In fact, this coefficient was found only for fermionic loops.
Yes, right. I know. So we're doing the scalar QED calculation. Yes, we get, of course, a bigger result. Yeah. But we wanted to.
I have to check sign. Somebody criticized me saying the sign made the wrong. It was, but I have to check.
Okay.
So, yeah, plus or minus. Okay, yes, please. Or your chairman.
Yeah, I had a question. I mean, you probably explained that, but I maybe missed that part when you were explaining that. So when you set up this equation for pi squared, and then there was a contribution there from the energy density. The trace. But were you using the result there for that or afterwards for rho, assuming that it was the Citerisarian as your starting
yes,
point?
Yes,
so
yes.
I was wondering whether that is somehow relevant, because the point is that these in the massless minimally coupled, so when you really take the massless case, this tape that you are considering and that gives, well, to begin with, in that case, you don't have the band tape vacuum, so you consider this other state that gives you this time-dependent evolution. But what I'm trying to say is that let's put it this way. Suppose that you took this initial state that you consider to calculate pi squared in that way and evaluated the stress tensor for this state with the usual procedure. I think that the result that you will get will not be the Sitter invariant. So you will have a non-trivial. And so then I wonder whether if that is the case, and you take that into account in your equation, maybe then it will be compatible with the, let's say, with the result that
I tried to do something similar, but maybe I didn't proceed it very rigorously. In fact, it's automatically sits when I find this quantity. It comes from the expression for energy momentum tensor in the Sitter space. So it is very difficult to worked out anything which is not the Sitter invariant in this sense. So it is, you know, like circle,
right, so
like snake biting itself on
it
that. So I don't know how to proceed.
But maybe
there's the way.
I can mention maybe a reference by Kirsten and Garriga where they discuss several things. But for instance, they have this time dependent, also Allen and Fulacci.
This paper, and you referred to them. You mean Allen Fulacci, relatively old paper, before 2005.
So
we had reference to that.
I'm wondering whether the state that gives rise to these five, there's a point that maybe might be relevant if you consider that in the original Allen and Fulacci paper, they say that even when you consider these states, which are not the Sitter invariant, the result for the expectation value of the stress tensor is the Sitter invariant. That is wrong. I mean, and afterwards, Fulacci also admitted that.
I'm rather surprised.
Yeah, so
I thought the stress tensor is wrong.
When you start with one of the generic Allen Fulacci,
there's a zero mode. But it doesn't contribute much, right?
But it does contribute a little bit. In the original paper, they said that that's a little mistake. But that is relevant.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I agree. and then you don't pay for much.
Yeah, the other thing is there is a discontinuity, as you mentioned, as you take Denver to zero limit.
Well, but so I can always, no, there is no discontinuity in a sense. In both solutions can be matched. If I take a zero limit, it would be the same if I properly choose efficiency. But
I can
always start with m equals zero. In that case, there is no problem.
Right, but the limiting process is tricky.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
This is like, I feel like Alcoholics Anonymous, because the same calculation we did, it's on the same sign, and reading your paper, we're thinking, wow, this is amazing. one of the things that was puzzling to us when we were doing it was, and you had in your slide when you had the solutions, you had the two exponential solutions, one of which is a growing solution, and you took the linear expansion of that.
I don't know what to do with this exponentially rising solution.
Yeah.
Anyway, energy density of this state is zero because it's thematically found from I don't know. It's not zero, it's constant. Uh-huh. It doesn't rise because it's automatically found from the energy momentum tensor.
Yeah.
What I did, I made expansion simply because we are very interested in small m mass limit, this way. But of course, what is written there is simpler than to make expansion.
Yeah.
So there is something which is...
You don't have a physical intuition for what the exponential would mean as opposed to...
No, this is closely related to the understanding what was the beginning of the sequence.
Yeah.
Before that, I cannot say much. And our attempt with Einhorn and Zakharov, I don't want... They are very good guys, but we were not successful trying to make a new model. There were two papers, 93. In physical reality. Oh, I almost made up time.
because it was funny when we were doing this calculation, we generated a flurry of emails from ourselves when we're doing this science and your paper. It's an interesting one. Anyway, so all right, let's end this video and.